From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and to the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet, and keeping you company tonight, it's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And we are all really excited about this segment tonight, because if you missed the last hour of the show, I'll just repeat the fact that obviously, Asheville, North Carolina is a very haunted place. That's why ghost tours are so popular there. And last month, in June of 2014, a couple from Iowa, Greg and Sue Becker, took a ghost tour. And, of course, any good ghost tour in Asheville includes Church Street, where you find buildings that date all the way back to the late 1800s. And one of the most active sites, you could say, is the United Methodist Church. Well, Greg and Sue were on their tour, and they stopped for a little bit in front of the church, and Greg took some photographs on his cell phone, and one of them shows something that looks pretty darn strange. And so he contacted me, and I thought it was impressive. And so we are now trying to get to the bottom of what he may have captured and get a really crack team of historians and investigators looking into this. And he has been kind enough to join us on the show tonight to tell us a bit about that night and the photograph that he took. So, Greg, welcome to Speaking of Strange, sir.
Well, thank you, Joshua.
You know, I see a lot of ghost photographs every year. I mean, just hundreds and hundreds of them. And I saw yours, and immediately I thought, wow, this looks like this could be the real deal. And before we sort of get into a description of the photograph, I'm always interested in the photographers, because sometimes I think maybe these ghosts, if you will, are more apt to appear for certain types of people rather than others. So now, you told me on the telephone before that you'd never really had a paranormal experience in your life. So do you mind if I ask you to tell me a little bit more about who you are in general?
Sure. Okay. You're correct. I haven't had any paranormal experiences in the past, so this is pretty unique. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, my wife Sue and I were on vacation in Asheville and decided to take this ghost tour. We've taken tours in the past, several other cities, Asheville, Salem, Massachusetts, Stowe, Vermont. We saw in the travel guide Asheville, had a tour and decided we'd take it. Didn't expect to see anything. Our tour guide was very knowledgeable about the city and suggested we take photos and felt really kind of silly taking snapshots of things when nothing was visible to the naked eye. So not something that, you know, we expected to see anything unusual, but, you know, more from a historic perspective, just getting an idea of what Asheville was about and some of the history was the main reason we took the tour.
And so now, Greg, what is your background? What is your occupation?
Well, I'm a purchasing agent for an athletic clothing manufacturer here in Waterloo.
Okay. So now, here you are walking down the street on the night of Wednesday, June 18th, 2014. About what time of night would you say it was when you ended up there on Church Street?
Well, according to the cell phone, it was about 12 minutes after 10 that evening.
Okay, and do you recall what the weather was like?
Oh, it was a pleasant evening. There was no rain or anything.
Okay.
I don't remember if it was overcast they're not, but a pleasant evening.
All right. So now, one of the great things about what you did was you took a number of photographs at that spot from what appears to be the same position, and that's really helpful when it comes to analyzing images because it gives you some controls that you can compare things to. So in your controls, there's nothing out of the ordinary, and then all of a sudden, boom, in one of these pictures, you have this image. Now, so far on the show, I have not tried to explain in my own words what it looked like to me, but what did you and Sue think this looked like when you first saw the picture?
Well, immediately to us, it looked like a woman dressed in a dark dress. You can see a shoulder strap. It appeared that she was reaching down for something. I don't know if at the end of her arm was a white gloved hand or if it was just a white glow. And then you could see the leg bones, kind of bent legs as she was bending down to reach for something. And what was really kind of unusual, there was almost a light blue glow in the stomach area, which was really intriguing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We saw the same thing because I think that's a great description. In my opinion, it looks very much like a woman with her right arm extended. And like you said, she could be reaching down toward the ground or she could be pointing toward a certain spot on the ground, because for those who are not familiar with the history of Church Street, over the years, a lot of bodies have been buried up and down that street, and there are a number of sort of legends about that church. One of them involves a murder that took place long ago. I don't know if it's historically accurate or not, but they say the minister at that church may have once, and we're talking 100 years ago or more, covered up a murder and buried or assisted in the burial of the murder victim sort of secretly there on the grounds. And a lot of the people who have attended that church over the years have told me personally that they have seen ghosts on those grounds. There's even a story about a nun, as many people call her, that floats up and down the street. But up until now, we haven't had like a very, very specific spot that we could look at on a specific date. And that's what's so exciting about what you've captured here. We can tell where this appeared. We can see where she's pointing. And so now, you told me before, but just for the record, you're certain that there's no way any physical person from the group could have stepped in front of your shot without you knowing it, right?
No. In fact, it was a very small group on the tour. We had the tour guide, my wife Sue, and another couple. So literally five of us. And there was no one else in the area, you know, walking by or anyone at all in the area. So we were, again, just amazed that anything showed up. In fact, I'll add that my wife, Sue, also took photographs throughout the tour with her camera and took some photos of the same area within a minute or so of mine, and nothing at all appeared. So it's really quite amazing.
And what roughly what kind of a cell phone do you have there? Is it an iPhone or an Android type phone, or what
It's an Android, and it's very new. I literally had it probably a month, and it was some of the first photos I had taken with it.
Well, good looking
shot.
That
evening, I probably took 40 photos, just click around town, and that was the only one any unusual image appeared.
And Sam, you sent me an interesting email after you looked at this picture. What are some of your thoughts on it, Sam?
Oh, well, I mean, so when you sent the pictures to me, it didn't say, hey, look here. You just said, look at these two photos. So it's sort of like playing, what's different in here. And then, you pretty easily spotted the figure. To me, it appeared, like Greg said, a human figure bending down, pointing at something. To me, it looked like clothes. There were clothes on it, but not of this era, in my opinion. And, like, you know, not like something that somebody would have been wearing today. And also, there was no shadow.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, and I boosted it up. I put in some photo editing software to boost levels and just see if I could see any different details and stuff. No shadows. And, you know, at first I thought, oh, it's just probably a weird light off of the corner of the, because the church has a lot of old stonework on there and there's a bush right in the front. But no, it was neither of those. And it definitely, I mean, you can see an arm, you see a hand, you see a head. It almost looks like Peter Pan tights or something. You know,
so now, Shelley, you're an investigator. You have traveled around the world looking into ghostly phenomena. What is your impression of this photo?
I think it's an amazing photo. I saw the same things that all of you did, and I noticed that it was solid. I couldn't see anywhere where you could see through it. But I couldn't really tell if it was a woman or a man. Kind of looks like it's got a girly shirt on, but and the face, I couldn't see any detail with the face, but it's amazing, and you see it right away. I mean, it just totally catches your eye when you see the first picture and then you look at the second picture, and it is amazing, and
yeah.
I know exactly where this picture was taken. We've walked by it a million times, and This is really, really something.
All right, we're already coming up on our break, so let me just go ahead and let you know here, Greg. What we're going to do is we're going to take this interview. I just wanted to make sure we had all the info correct, and I'm going to send all this material to Vance Pollock, who is our chief historian at the museum, and this guy is like the Sherlock Holmes of historical investigations. He's going to be digging into that side of it. Also, our imaging analyst engineer, we have several of them, but Mobius is going to look at it, C. Eric Scott's going to look at it, and we're going to try to figure out if something happened at that spot on that date at any point in the past. And so, I can't commend you enough and thank you for, taking great photos and sending them to me and coming on the program to make sure that we have all the facts straight, and we're going to have a nice follow-up and report for you again soon. So this is wonderful. Thank you again, Greg. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. And
okay.
Wish your crew all the success in trying to get to the bottom of this story. It's intriguing.
Yeah, it sure is. So, that's a cliffhanger for all of you. Until we get our analysis done, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I actually have an interesting little essay that I want to read to you about what you might want a physicist to say if he were to speak at your funeral. Fittingly enough. This is the program where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
We got stars directing our path.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and tonight's program is brought to you by the Asheville institution called Wright's Coin Shop and the family business of Miss Shelley Wright. And you can call Wright's Coin Shop at 828-298-5402. But, you know, I am here in Puerto Rico, and Sam and Shelley are in Asheville. Our guest, Greg, is in Iowa. All of us were brought together in part due to the magic of Christopher's computers. And, you know, we hold this program in the highest esteem. We only use the best technology, which is why it sounds this good, even though we're all thousands of miles apart. And so if you have any issue with the computer, I'm telling you right now, Christopher is a good friend of mine. He's a friend of Sam's. And if you have questions about computers, if you need a new computer, if you want to update your computer, if you get a virus and you just don't know who to trust, you don't want to get ripped off. I mean, I know it's intimidating when you end up in these positions where you might not – well, even if you're computer savvy, you never really feel like you're savvy enough when you're out there working on getting a new computer or updating one. So let me put your mind at ease and tell you, wherever you are, give it a shot. Call Christopher's Computers, 828-670-9800, 828-670-9800. Their website is christopherscomputers.com, and you'll also find a link at speakingofstrange.com. And when you visit that link at speakingofstrange.com, currently you can also see this photograph that Greg Becker took showing this full-bodied apparition of what looks like a lady standing in front of the church there. And maybe she's reaching down, but, boy, I'd like to think she might be pointing something out for us. So when it comes to these concepts, I was recently sent an interesting, we'll call it a little essay that I feel is worth reading on the air. It comes from iflscience.com, and it's an interesting sort of marriage between the concepts of science and mortality. If you are part of a new trend, then you just might want a physicist to speak at your funeral. You want the physicist to talk to your grieving family about the conservation of energy, so they will understand that your energy has not died. You want the physicist to remind your sobbing mother about the first law of thermodynamics, that no energy is created in the universe and none is destroyed. You want your mother to know that all your energy, every vibration, every BTU of heat, every wave of every particle that her beloved child once was, remains with her in this world. You want the physicist to tell your weeping father that amid the energies of the cosmos, you gave as good as you got. And at one point, you'd hope that the physicist would step down from the pulpit and walk to your broken-hearted spouse there in the pew and tell him or her that all the photons that ever bounced off your face, all the particles whose paths were interrupted by your smile, by the touch of your hair, hundreds of trillions of particles have raced off you like children, their ways forever changed by you. And as your widow perhaps rocks in the arms of a loving family, may the physicist let her know that all the photons that bounced from you were gathered in the particle detectors that are her eyes, that those photons created within her constellations of electromagnetically charged neurons whose energy will go on forever. And the physicist will remind the congregation of how much of all our energy is given off as heat. There may be a few fanning themselves with their programs, as he says it, and he will tell them that the warmth that flowed through you in life is still there, still part of all that we are, even as we who mourn continue in the heat of our own lives. And you'll want the physicist to explain to those who loved you that they need not have faith. Indeed, they should not have faith. Let them know that they can measure, that scientists have measured precisely the conservation of energy and found it accurate, verifiable, and consistent across space and time. You can hope your family will examine the evidence and satisfy themselves that the science is sound and that they'll be comforted to know your energy is still around. According to the law of the conservation of energy, not one bit of you is gone. You are just less orderly. Amen.
Amen.
Hmm.
You sound a little unsure about that, Shelley.
I personally do not know one person who would be comforted by that.
I do.
Not one.
It's essentially the same idea, isn't it? That, you know, you can phrase it, well, he or she is in heaven, or he or she is simply elsewhere in a more peaceful, better place. It's the same kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I get it. I do. But there's just nothing particularly comforting, I believe, to most people.
Well, when you start looking into the connection between religion and spirituality and science and the paranormal, it's really interesting when you keep up with some of these statements the Vatican has put out and apparently is continuing to plan to put out on extraterrestrial life. This story in the Examiner says Pope Francis is reportedly preparing a major world statement about extraterrestrial life and its theological implications. This is supposed to be a statement about, quote, first contact, end quote. There are a lot of people who are really on edge to see what he's going to say, but don't forget now, a few years ago, the head of the Vatican Observatory, he made some pretty profound statements. I guess it was 2008. When Father Gabriel Funes, also a Jesuit, made some sort of startling statements about how extraterrestrial life is likely, now think about this, likely to be more ethically evolved than humans, because he said that intelligent extraterrestrial life may not have experienced a fall from grace and may actually be free from original sin, thereby remaining in full friendship with their creator. Huh. So that's an interesting concept, isn't it? That not only they may be out there, but they are actually in some ways perhaps purer than we are because they may not have gone through the sinning process that we often hear about, the original sin.
Well, there might not even be sin in their world.
Yeah. Oh, well, if they never crossed into that threshold, then maybe they're not aware of what this thing is that we call sin.
Sin came from the garden of good and evil, right? And God told Adam and Eve not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Well, if they don't have a God and they didn't have a garden and they didn't have a tree and there was nothing to rebel or sin against, you know, then maybe there is no sin. Now we're just getting deep. I can't think, man. Don't make me think.
Well, you know, the sort of exciting thing about this is that we obviously have all these famous concepts embedded in our psyche about points in history when the Catholic Church was spearheading the persecution of scientists, most famously Galileo, you know, locking him up, imprisoning him for his research into the stars. And, of course, anybody who was caught with a copy of Copernicus's book suggesting that maybe the Earth wasn't the absolute center of the universe was facing some very serious consequences, including possible death.
Stoning.
Yeah. And in fact, Copernicus even insisted that his work only be published upon his death because he knew the fury and the furor that would escape once this was released. We're already up on a break, but you know what? this UFO flap that I mentioned on recent editions of the show, it is continuing around the world. We have interesting stories here from Florida, from Canada. So we'll dig into some of these and even more when we come back. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and it's brought to you tonight by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Live from a phantasmagoria of dimensions all around the blue ball we call Earth. I am Joshua P. Warren, and you're listening to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright Coin Shop. And, you know, I want to mention this again. If you go right now to joshuapwarren.com, you will find a sale on some instantly downloadable PDFs of some of the more popular works that I've written recently. The Wishing Machine Workbook, including a virtual wishing machine. Poor Man's Paranormal, which tells you how to create all kinds of paranormal investigation tools from household materials. The Brown Mountain Lights viewing guide, including stunning photographs, even a picture of an alien. And as a freebie, we'll even throw in the very short work, Practical Wand Making, about how you can, again, take things probably right around your house and turn them into effective wands. And the secret test to determine if the wand that you have built is right for you. Right now you can get all of that downloaded instantly. You can be reading it tonight right there on your computer, your tablet, your cell phone for $9.95. It's insane, I know, but if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll be able to do that tonight. So I was talking about the amount of UFO activity that is continuing to run rampant around the world. And, you know, when you read stories like the one about the Vatican preparing some announcement, and then I told you about the signal that I'm going to be coordinating to send into outer space in a couple of weeks with the help of George Norrie and all of these ham radio operators trying to make contact with the aliens – I mean, it kind of makes you think, wow, I'm getting this little tingly feeling like maybe we actually are on the precipice. Maybe this is the year. And the stage is continuing to be set. Here's a story from Austria. Multicolored UFOs seen in formation over Austria. Officials there are baffled to explain this sighting in which dozens of people reported seeing between
get a load of this, 50 and 100 objects flying in formation. Let's see here. They were able to take a number of photographs of these before they disappeared. So here's a quote from a witness. At first, we thought it might be some kind of natural phenomenon, but then we realized they were flying in formation. It was clear it could not be dismissed as something natural. The strange thing was, despite their bright lights, there was no noise at all from these objects. So air traffic controllers said that they had been made aware of the incident, but they couldn't figure out what was happening there. Here's a story from Canada. UFOs over Toronto caught on tape, prompting police reports. Something was flying over Toronto on last Saturday night, causing residents to contact police and go to social media with images and videos of lights in the sky. One woman said, quote, it was really high up, round, bright, and shining. Lasted about 25 minutes. Another person said this at one point that he saw a big light in the sky that looked almost like a very potent laser. So nobody can explain what the heck was going on there. And you've probably heard this story from Siberia. Whenever I think about weird things happening on the ground in Siberia, of course, I think about the Tunguska scenario, in which I believe it was maybe 1908, something like that. Some gigantic thing exploded in Tunguska. Nobody knows what it was, but it wiped out a major, major section of the forest.
How many trees was it? Do you know off the top of your head? I'm looking it up because it was such an astronomical sum of trees. That's always blown my mind, you know.
Yeah, you know, well, not only that, but the pattern was a butterfly shape.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that kind of has a creepy edge because I'm a big fan of the Mothman sightings. And if you've ever watched the Mothman Prophecies, which obviously is kind of a, you know, fictional spin on it, the imagery of a moth-like or winged being is very prevalent, and it represents maybe the connection we have in the human psyche to these ancient interdimensional creatures that have always been playing some role behind the scenes. And so, you know, patterns play a big role, and when you consider there was a moth pattern at Tunguska, it like shakes you up a little bit.
Yeah,
but
according to Wikipedia, you know, not always the best, but I mean pretty okay. Estimated that's hard to say. The Tunguska explosion knocked down some 80 million trees over an area of 2,150 square kilometers. That's 830 square miles. And that the shockwave from the blast was measured 5.0 on the Richter scale.
My goodness.
That's big.
Well, for months now, these weird, mysterious craters have been popping up around Siberia. And the latest one was about only 4 feet in diameter, but it can be 300 feet deep. Okay, they say these are ranging from 100 to 300 feet deep. And when they probe these holes, they're kind of the hole is sort of shaped like a cone, so it gets narrower as you go down. Actually, I think that's what they mean when they say shaped like a cone. I'm assuming they mean it gets narrower as you go down, instead of the other way around. But right now, scientists who have traveled there say they don't know if this is a natural formation. It certainly doesn't look like anything that could be the result of man. Let's see here. A deputy of the regional parliament flew over the area in a helicopter and gave this account, quote, there is ground outside as if it was thrown out as a result of an underground explosion. Observers give several versions. According to the first, initially the place was smoking, and then there was a bright flash. In the second version, a celestial body fell there, end quote. You know, we don't know what to make of this. However, there are plenty of people out there who think perhaps the Tunguska incident was the product of testing done with Nikola Tesla's death ray technology,
mm-hmm.
Which is certainly possible, and I have no doubt that he had the the intellectual prowess, and even at that point in his life, the ambition to use whatever resources he could get access to via the military or whatever else to produce these major rays of energy. And, you know, if Tesla was part of this project, sending down some kind of a massive atmospheric ray, then maybe Siberia was, from that point on, kind of set aside as the place where we just sort of play around with these new beams. And it would kind of make sense that the brute force of Tunguska was kind of a big, messy, crazy, almost uncontained explosion all over the place. Well, maybe now that technology has been honed with almost pin-like precision, so that now, you know, when they turn the beam on, you can hit a spot that's just a few feet in diameter, but so powerful that it can go hundreds of feet into the Earth. I mean, is that possible? Of course it's possible. I don't know. It's just a theory.
It would be that would be tremendously powerful.
Yeah.
Tremendously. How would you harness that, though? Once again, don't make me think.
I think it probably is harnessed, and that's what they're demonstrating. They can control it. They can draw on the Earth like it's a big laser pointer if they want to. Okay, we are okay. Yeah, well, we got a couple minutes before our next break here. Well, I will just mention this. I don't know if this has a connection to the documentary that I recently was a part of called Aliens on the Moon, but now there's a story that came out in Forbes, of all places, and the headline is Alien Artifacts on the Moon? ? And in this story, they are not specifically citing anything about the Aliens on the Moon program on Sci-Fi, but this is talking about all of the scientists that are saying we should start giving more serious attention to the possibility that there may be ancient artifacts on the moon. That it's even more likely that if we are going to take this idea that in the entire vast millions, if not billions of years, that Earth may have at one point or another been visited by other civilizations, it's far more likely that evidence would be found on the moon than here on planet Earth. And it's the sort of thing that I was saying on this show as well, that what are the chances they would have come to Earth and not stopped on the moon? The moon is a much better place for us to look to in order to find remnants. And here's now Forbes saying, okay, these are some serious scientists who are claiming we need to start scrutinizing this and we need to get more serious about it. Is this another topic that's about to have the lid blown off? Is this why the Vatican is about to make an announcement? Because some new evidence is about to be revealed by the Chinese, since they're exploring up there? I don't know. When we come back, we will be in the final minutes of this hour, and here's a totally new spin on our topics. What happens if you break into a guy's house to steal everything, and you don't realize that he is a former WWE wrestling champion? You'll find out. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
we are in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And next hour, well, that's the hour we call the Dark 30 hour, which means we are deep into safe harbor, and that gives us an opportunity to fulfill our duties and inform you on some of the more sordid and seedy news, things that are more outrageous and controversial, and not necessarily for the easily offended, certainly not for the kiddies. So you can determine whether or not you want to stick around for that extra hour.
Tuck Grandpa in. It ain't for him either.
Probably not, even though my grandma sure seems to like it a lot.
Oh, does she?
That's true, yes. My grandmother is a big fan of the Dark 30 hour.
Hey, Grandma.
Hey, Grandma.
Now you see what happened to me. You see the genes went wrong somewhere. And here is a story from the Huffington Post about a couple of guys who decided to break into a Phoenix, Arizona home and steal some stuff. Apparently, they'd just chosen what looked like a big, nice house. And, you know, you might think that 9 times out of 10, if somebody lives in a big, nice house, it's some little, you know, pencil-neck, beady-eyed, white-collar corporate guy who's not a threat. But every once in a while, you find a guy who has a big, nice, fancy house because he was a WWE wrestling champion. And so, they broke in, and as luck would have it, this champion named Daniel Bryan, at one point it says Daniel Bryan, another point it says Bryan Danielson. Probably one's a stage name and the other's a real name.
I will find out.
Yeah. So it says he and his wife came home, and when they pulled into the carport, they saw a door to the house start to open. And now, immediately, apparently, according to the wrestling champ here, their very first concern was their dog, Josie, inside the house. So this big wrestler, and I haven't seen a picture of him, but, you know, I can imagine.
I'm checking him out. He looks a little burly, a little like Ashvili, actually. He's got kind of a big beard.
Really?
Yeah, kind of.
Even scarier to be like.
And just to clear it up, his name is Bryan Lloyd Danielson, better known by his ring name, Daniel Bryan.
Okay, so how creative. Big, good guy who can kick your butt, but not the most creative and on the block. So anyway, he goes running into the house, and he said that he saw these two guys go running out the back. So he pursued them. One of the guys got away, but the other one got caught. And says here the champ here jumped onto the man and said he did not have to apply his signature move known as the yes lock, but he did put the guy in a rear choke hold and very quickly subdued him. The wrestler said, and this is kind of funny, he said, quote, unfortunately, he wasn't in very good shape, so it didn't take much, end quote. As if he'd rather have had, you know, a serious struggle on his hands there.
The one I'm reading here, it says that he held him in a rear naked choke. that's what it says on TMZ. Now, I'm trying to, like, get more, like, is that a different move, or was there nudity involved, but a rear naked choke until police arrived?
It's a different move at my house.
Hey-o! Hey-o!
So, says here the 22-year-old man who was arrested there, he faces a burglary charge. And, hey, this is great PR for the wrestler, I would imagine. It shows that he's still got it, and it's one of those little feel-good stories where you think, hey, maybe somebody out there does get their just desserts from time to time.
Karma, man.
Yeah.
That would have been, I mean, if only there were video footage. You'd be surprised how many of these, you know, celebrities don't have good video surveillance around their big fancy homes, and it would have been nice to have some footage of this. Well, okay, folks, we're going to take another break here. And when we come back, it will be time for the Dark 30 Hour. And now, as you know, I'm a radio host, and so I'm always trying to hype things up and tell you how cool the show's going to be and how crazy it's going to be and how you should stick around. But I'm going to tell you honestly, no joke, tonight's Dark 30 Hour is one of the darkest and weirdest and craziest that we've had in a long time. I don't know why that is. I don't know what's going on in the world. But I have literally had trouble figuring out how to read some of these stories within the parameters of the FCC, not to mention good taste. So we'll see how that goes. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.